The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Well, good morning, Shasta County and listeners everywhere. We are broadcasting live downtown Redding, KCNR, 1460 AM, 96.5 FM, your talk radio. You can also listen to us streaming online, kcnr1460.com. And the shows are always archived at votekevincry.com. That is votekevincry.com. And you could always follow me on Facebook as well, Vote Kevin Cry on Facebook. Well, we have a guest in the studio this morning that I'm very excited to get to here in a second. I will say I love this time of year. No longer are we looking at the weather forecast and seeing triple digits, although I do love that because it keeps Shasta County from having 200,000 people live here because people can't really tolerate those 110 degree straight days in July. But now we get into fall, almost Christmas season. And it feels like basketball season. This weather, the cool fall mornings really, really feel like basketball season. It starts to rain, and then we know it is basketball season indeed. Went to a Kings game with my son last night. We went last minute. That was great. The Kings lit the beam. They had three of their players, two starters, and their sixth man didn't play. So I thought the chances of a victory were slim to none. But anytime I can get some time with my son, he just turned 13, seventh grade, and this is just such a special time. All the kids, we've always enjoyed going to sporting events, and I've enjoyed watching them play, but something just about my son and I getting to spend, 2 hours, 2.5 hours driving down, 2.5 hours driving back. Won't say that he was great company on the way back. He was sleeping by Williams, I think, but it was great, so I'm thankful for moments like that. So I digress. In the studio with me today, is a gentleman, Michael. How you doing today?
I'm doing good.
Good. So I'll give you some backstory. Michael called me the other day. Do you go by Mike or Michael?
It doesn't matter, either one.
Okay. So he left me a voicemail after we had the opioid settlement dollars presentation. It was Wednesday, and actually you might have left it Tuesday during the meeting. And it's a 3.5 minute. Voicemail. I listened to the first, literally 15 seconds. I just cut the message off, never even did finish it. And I said, I'm going to call this guy. And we spoke just for about, 3 minutes. And I said, I want to have you on my show this coming Sunday because I want you to tell a little bit of your story and what you've been up to. So the first half hour, we're going to talk a little bit about Mike's story. And then the second half hour, we're going to talk about all the gaps in service or all the gaps where people fall through the cracks in the system, and because this is going to be one of the, I will say this opioid settlement dollar conversation is going to be one of the most important things I know I will do in my first 4-year term as a supervisor. I've met with Supervisor-elect Matt Plummer a few times about this, and of course we've had a lot of great discussions on the board. So I'm really anxious to see a lot of people's lives change, and Michael has a great story. So we're going to jump in. So, Michael, you were born in 1975, correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so give us where you're from and how'd you come to Redding? And I know that's a big question, but the mic is yours, sir.
So being raised on a farm in southern Missouri, I always had a dream. I always had direction with a godly father and a mother. And I always navigated things towards God. Although I had picked up some negative habits, I tried to cover up as a young man, and it just surfaced throughout my life. Drinking at the age of 8 years old.
So you started drinking at 8?
Yeah. And anyways, things progressed, not knowing how to deal and cope with things in life, the loss of people, the feelings of abandonment, just different things. you know, I just felt like no one understood me. The ones that did were the ones who loved me, and those were the ones in church, and it always drew me back to God. Anyway, so I had began drinking off and on at 8 years old, however I could get it. My parents would entertain people with alcohol when it was a special occasion.
And you had older parents, correct?
Yeah.
You had said that your dad was retired when you were born.
My father retired in 1971. I was born in 1975 in St. Louis, Missouri. My father and my mother had invested in rental properties. My mother worked in the medical field. She had... My older brother, she was told that she couldn't have children, so she adopted him, and my dad, and they, then my sister and I came. My grandfather and grandmother on my mom's side lived in Ozark County, Missouri, West Plains, Missouri, to be exact. My family goes way back during the settlement riots. Actually, I have, a lot of Cherokee and in my background, so that's home for me.
Do you feel, let me ask you this, because I know that you said you started drinking at 8 years old.
Yeah.
And you had a brother that passed away when he was three, mm-hmm. when you were eight, and that's mm-hmm. what started you, you believe, you're drinking for coping, is that correct?
Yeah, I do believe that. And it just, it gave me a negative coping mechanism that covered up a lot of pain. It was a lot of pain. You know, my whole family was in pain. We didn't know how to deal with grieving at the time. I know that we had switched churches. I was raised in a Pentecostal church during the Shepherd Movement where nobody heard from God but the pastor, and my dad wasn't having it, so we left. And there was a gap in our service with God, and then we found a church that was a Methodist church. It was a small church, and you know, we found a lot of love there. And
how old were you around that time?
I was probably 11. I gave my heart to Jesus at 12 years old. I'll never forget my mother leading me to Christ in, at the farmhouse. And, you know, I just knew there was something out there that, I was hearing about, and I wanted to check it out, you know. And all through my life, I've always had this, getting away from people and trying to listen to the Lord and have a relationship with him.
So when you guys started that Methodist church at 12, at what age did you start experimenting with methamphetamine?
I was 17 years old, actually, when I started that. I had dabbled in marijuana along the way, and that association with those people, you know, just one day, me and a friend of mine, we were smoking a joint. We left at Zero Hour High School, and we're driving down the road, and he had a 1968 Chevy pickup truck. I'll never forget it. It was nice. It was redone, and he pulled the glove box door down. It was metal, and he goes, "Chop this up," and I didn't know how to chop it up, so I chopped it up, and I did some methamphetamines, and, you know, it's, you know.
You were 17.
Yeah, I was 17.
And your parents knowingly allowed you to drink, like when you were...
They were not okay with it.
Were not okay.
I snuck around.
Okay, so it was just accessible.
It was accessible. It was to the point that I would steal their alcohol and fill the bottles with whatever I could find to make it look like I wasn't drinking. They also had an antique shop. I'd go in there and get the old antique figurines that had 19, 20-some bourbon and pop the tops out. And my dad would find me blacked out in the yard. Sometimes in the barn.
And what was the discipline like when if you were caught drinking?
You know, my discipline was pretty rough. There was a lot of yelling. There was no love. There was no Galatians 6:1 where we're going to restore someone gently. My parents were new Christians at the time, and you know, they were going through things. As I look back, I understand why and how things happened the way they did. I know with all of my heart, my parents worked extremely hard to make a good life for all of us children. My parents came out of the tail end of the Depression. My mom had one meal a day growing up. They really struggled. My grandfather, you know, he was born in 1896. That's how old my grandfather was. And,
wow.
You know, he retired from the, Frisco Railway, the St. Louis San Francisco Railway. So one of my dreams, you know, I've had these downloads through my life of dreams that I wanted. And one thing was I wanted to be a bull rider like my Uncle Richard. And I started riding bulls in high school. And, I went to Lyle Sankey Rodeo School. I became part of the rodeo circuit. My family owned sale barns throughout Missouri. My dad was a cattle buyer. He bought and sold cattle. He was just an entrepreneur. He had a lot of rental property. So when my dad got sick...
And how old were you when your dad got sick?
I was 17.
17.
My dad was given 4 to 6 weeks to live. And my dad was a veteran from the Vietnam War. The VFW, Ellis Fischel, Dr. Dahl had told my dad, hey, you just need to go home, prepare to die. And it broke me. I was working full time, going to school. I worked nights. My sister just had a baby, Christopher. And boy, did I love that guy. I miss him.
And what's the age gap between your sister and yourself?
2.5 years.
She's 2.5 years older?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So at what age were you when then your dad did pass away? Did he, in fact, pass away 6 weeks?
My dad got healed and set free of cancer. He was stage four. He lived 22 years after that.
22 years.
Yeah, so he began to prepare to leave my mom with very little to take care of. So he started selling real property. He sold the farm. They moved to northern Missouri to be closer to his family. We kept going to the doctor, and they're like, we can't find anything. Dr. Dahl had already retired. He was a Christian doctor. They'd prayed over him. My dad had had a experience in the front yard one day he had told me about. And when they went back to the doctor, Dr. Dahl's like, you're cancer-free. This has got to be a miracle. And along the line, my dad continued to visit these doctors at Ellis Fischel at VFW, and my mom would tell me, after Dr. Dahl left, you would have foreign doctors come in, and she would explain to them. They would say, something's wrong here. Something's wrong. And my mom's like, no, there's nothing wrong. You don't understand. My husband was healed from cancer, and this is a testimony. There's no cancer in him. And she's like, I've seen him on his deathbed, and here he is. I didn't understand these things, and I was introduced to methamphetamines at this time. So I'm running the farm, working and taking care of my parents' rental property, being there for my sister. It was really hard on a 17-year-old. And once I tried that methamphetamines, I thought I can do anything. You know what I mean? And it was just like I thought I could hide things. I thought I could be a productive member of society. And
would you like say like a feeling of like invincibility kind of thing?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It not only did that affect me, but my inability to maintain celibacy. You know, there's a lot that goes along with drugs and alcohol, and one of those things is sexuality. We let our guard down. We lose our morals, and I'm thankful that the people that have surrounded me over the years have reminded me, hey, that's something you need to deal with. I hadn't dealt with that when I went to work for the railway.
And so how old were you when you went to work for the railway?
I believe I was 24.
So you're 24. Would you consider yourself a full-blown addict at 24?
No. Okay. Weekend warrior. I fit in with the guys. I didn't know that behind the scenes, a lot of the men that I worked with, I hired in and on a rail and tie sublitz in Thayer, Missouri for the Springfield division. So we replaced 1,500 miles of track in 12 days. There was over 1,200 guys, I believe, and I think we lost 4 people in that job, but I maintained a work ethic my father gave me when I was younger. We raised cattle, raised hogs, worked day and night. It was just an awesome life to be a part of life, and something I love is animals. Always have.
Okay, so you're 24, working on the railway.
Mm-hmm.
Railway. You're a weekend warrior, so you're doing like my brother would say, he was a functioning tweaker.
Yeah,
could hold a job.
Yeah,
do different things. Like
you
that.
Know, the BNSF had an acronym behind that. It was Beer, Narcotics, and Speed Freaks. The Burlington Northern Santa Fe had integrated with the Santa Fe Gentlemen and the Frisco Men, and I was hired in under the Frisco Agreement, and right out of the gate, I became a machine operator. Group 5, I went to Group 3, SEO, Special Equipment, then I became a foreman, and when I left the railway, I couldn't stop drinking.
How old were you when you left the railway?
Shoot.
Ballpark.
Probably 36.
About 36. Yeah. So you spent 12 years with the railway.
Yeah, I did.
Worked your way up to be a foreman.
And then I was going to be exempt. I was going to go to Fort Worth and learn how to be a roadmaster. I wanted to be a rail gang foreman. And, I hired in under the 219 PB rail agreement that when Reagan was in office, he wouldn't allow our brotherhood to strike. We were in the engineering department, so we kept working all the time. And you know, when you have derailments, you don't go to the motel and get a couple hours of sleep and come back to work. You don't leave the job site until the trains are running. So a lot of the times the roadmaster would come and give you a really good, nice, fat line of cocaine. And at that time I was like, yeah, we can do this. And everything, we were praised at the end of the job with truckloads of beer. You know what I mean? And I just felt like that was a life for me, but I know my mom and dad were praying. When I'd come home on the weekend, my mother would be like, if you're staying here, you're going to church.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I hear a lot of pastors, in the community talk about, well, we're not sin sniffers and we don't do this and we don't do that. Listen, if you're going to raise your child in a Christian home, then they need to go to church. They should go to church. If they don't want to go to church, I'm just saying that that saved my life. I believe. I believe that along the way, God had downloaded some scripture in me, and he has, even in my adult life, that has changed things dramatically. My thinking,
so let's
forgiveness.
Get, no, and I, yeah. And I love this. So you're 36. You leave the railway.
Mm-hmm.
And, so then what? So what brought you to, what did you come to California?
So I'm going to stop with leaving the railway and why, because I couldn't stop drinking. I found AA, you know, I went through AA. I went through rehab. I had the railroad, my EAP, employee assistance personnel. I had a personal, relationship with them. They flew me to some of the best rehabs in the world, according to the world. It cost a lot of money. I was in there with doctors, lawyers, pharmacists. You know, it became a lifestyle, to like mess up and go back. And, you know, I'm just thankful that, anyway, so when I quit, I was like, I need more. This AA thing, the sponsorship's not working. I've had some people tell me a few things, but what I did is I started reading God's word, and I was just stirred up on the inside, and I was really trying not to drink, and I just couldn't stop. So I had two public auctions. I sold all my memorabilia that I had saved since I was a little boy. I all this stuff, like baseball cards, my John Deere tractors. I had a lot of stuff, and I reached out to an auctioneer, and I sold that. And then in one auction, I sold all my guns, and not all of them, but my guns and my tools. And I wanted to go to Bible college. So I ended up at Victory Bible Institute in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
And you're about how old at this time?
Let's see. I would have been 36, probably.
36. Like, so yeah. this is pretty close timing after leaving the railway.
Right. And so was new. And Facebook was new to me then, right? So there was something that opened up. I had, while I was in.
So this is about 12 years ago.
Yeah.
Because what I want to do in the next 7 minutes, because I really want to unpack like what mm-hmm. your lowest point was. Yeah. And I want you to be able to articulate to the listeners. So when we go into the second half hour, how do you get from the railway, total functioning, great job, career driven, trending in a direction that a lot of people like would love to be in, and you're in that spot and you walk mm-hmm. away from it. To get, you know, to kick the drinking habit, you go to Bible college, and then what happened from there?
Something happened when I was working for the railway. I was, I'd met a girl, and I was going to be a father. And unfortunately, women have the right to take a child's life. So I was ready to be a dad. My parents were going behind me, and then all of a sudden I get a phone call that I'm no longer going to be a dad. And it drove me to drink more. I wouldn't come home. I would stay in the motels when I was a foreman in Kansas City, and just drink and do cocaine, whatever I could do. And it just drove me to a point where I didn't want to live no more. I really didn't. I didn't know any way out. I had no way out. And every time I tried to take myself out, God would bring me back in. I understand a bottom. I totally get it. My bottoms had a basement in it, and I had the blueprints. And I just knew how to drive myself to the ground. You know, I always worked myself to the end, and this time I was like, this is not working. So anyways, I ended up in Bible college, and I grew – God did some amazing things in me. The first book I've read from front to back was the Bible multiple times. And the second best thing – that happened while I was there was doing outreach, going underneath bridges, reaching out to people. We had the largest food ministry in the world. Haiti was one of the big things at the time. We were getting stuff that we could ship down to Haiti after the earthquakes. When I accessed friendship with my son's mother, I ended up taking a two-week vacation coming to California, and I just told her, I said, I have an aunt in Hayward. I want to see her. I haven't seen her since I was 17. And haven't seen her since I was 11 or so. I don't remember. But there was such a long gap there. And, you know, my aunt hadn't had a visitor in 20 years, and I went into her.
Mrs. Hayward, California?
Yeah, I went into her room, and I told the nurses, I'm like, don't tell her that I'm here, but just tell her she has a visitor. And she knew it was me. And I came in, and I seen her. And I think... despite people's differences in families or how they believe or whatever, the worst thing we can do is abandon those that we love. And I know that feeling when a person's down and out, or when you're in a community where you know no one and you've hit a bottom. And I got arrested when I lived out here, domestic violence. I went back to drinking. I knew I had to be at work the next day. And you know, any drug addict or alcoholic can find their fix. And I was at a bar, OK Corral, and
in Cottonwood,
and you know, I found me a tweaker, and I said, "Hey, can you find me something?" I hadn't touched that stuff in years.
How long about?
Probably, I want to say 6 years. It had been 6 years since I'd touched that, and I was like, "I got to go to work tomorrow." I drank myself. It was 3:30 in the morning, and anyways, so a week later, I'm in Shasta County Jail. I was visited in jail by Mike Gallagher and my pastor, Pastor Perry at Crossroads Bible Fellowship, you know, and I had lost my father. I lost my brother-in-law. There was just a lot of things happening, and I'm so thankful for God and those people he sends out to comfort others and just to show up. And that, you know, they didn't know me because I was new here, and I'm thinking to myself, while I'm in jail, why would they come see me? Why? You know, and I'd already been a part of the prison ministry in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Their jail's 1,870 inmates. Before I moved out here, I had a letter from McAllister State Maximum Penitentiary inviting me to come in. And, you know, this prison ministry at VBI had been going on for 30 years, and those guys had never seen anybody get an invitation. I was like, I don't know what that
but that but, so you go from being a part of the prison ministry to being incarcerated yourself in Shasta.
Absolutely.
County. So was that your first time of incarceration?
No. I got in trouble when I was 17. This fear of my parents not being able to pay the medical bills when my dad was in the hospital put me in a position to be a part of the number one cash crop in Missouri, and I began growing marijuana, distributing it. I had gotten pulled over one night. There was 3 bags of marijuana. And so I got charged with intent to distribute because of the 3 bags, the seeds, intent to manufacture, and possession. And I was looking at 24 years maximum. I don't know how it worked out, but my dad went with me to court. And, you know, he's on his deathbed, and he goes, I'm going to be there with you. I just want you to do one thing. I want you to look at the judge and be honest and tell him what you did. Just be honest. That's all you got to do. And I was. And, you know, when the judge read off the maximum sentence, I looked at him. I'm like, well, that's not what the prosecuting attorney said when he talked to my dad. And he said, well, we'll come back here in a little bit. So it went from the 20. They don't want it there. They didn't. Yeah. And I don't blame them, you know.
So when you're how long were you in Shasta County jail for?
6 months. Six months. And then, so when I got released, I went back to Cottonwood, and there was this no contact order. Well, she showed up one day for me to see my son. And I know that she can do that, but if I get caught within her with, in so many feet, of talking to her or or in her presence that I was going to do a 7-year lid, you know, and I was scared to death. I'm like, none of my past followed me out here. It wasn't, I didn't get in a whole lot of those. That was years ago. And this is my first charge in California. And I'm like, dude, I came out here on vacation. I find a girl. Now I'm on probation. And here's my little 6-month-old baby boy without a dad and my stepdaughters. And I loved them. And I'm like, they seen a part of me I never wanted anyone to see. I didn't want to see it myself, but I have to take a look at that every day. I have to take a look at, my role and my decisions, that one little decision. And my sponsor said this. He said, you know, it's either healthy or unhealthy. Another man here in town, his name's Paul Webb, a pastor. He said, you know, God's going to bless you and Satan's going to curse you. And he's going to use people to do it. And you got to figure out whose team you're on and what team they're on. And it just made a whole lot of sense. It's very simple to me. And so I've really worked hard at surrounding myself with people that are supportive. I've made so many mistakes, and when I read the word, I can identify with Paul saying, I'm the chief of all sinners. I've relapsed more than anybody in this town. You know, I've been through every program, and I have never, ever, ever experienced grace and mercy and love like Visions of the Cross has. Steve Lucarelli and his family ooze grace and love and support. And they love the whole family. They're about restoring the whole family, not just the mother and the child, but the father and his children, you know, the whole family. They just believe in miracles. I see it happen all the time. And that's just like, okay, when I hit reset, that's what I want. I want a miracle. And, you know, if I'm sober today, that's a miracle.
Yeah. Now you've got 12 years sober.
I have 11 years off alcohol.
11 off alcohol. Yeah. Excuse me. And then you're 2 years
off,
everything.
Off methamphetamines,
2 years off of methamphetamines.
And then I have a year and 6 months off antidepressants. I was just guided through that by some loving people at a place called Family Dynamics. Dr. Sandy Wilson has shown me on a computer, Michael, you don't need this stuff. All you need is a grateful mind. And she showed me a depressed mind, and she showed me a grateful mind. And the grateful mind was a healed mind. I'm like, well, why do I need this stuff? And so just the things they've suggested that I do, focus on resilience, focus on the things that I don't have that are part of the elements to be resilient. One of those is grit. I mean, my past shows that I mess up a lot. And so I'm focusing on grit. When I graduated the program this last time after 90 days, the first time I ever heard from God in a long time, it was just real simple. Study Solomon. So I've been studying Solomon for almost 2 years. And then when I got blessed with a home that I get to share with other men.
Well, let's do this. So before we jump into that, before we jump into that, we're
going
to take a 2-minute break. When we come back, we're going to talk about like where you are today, how you're leaning into the community, and then what some of the gaps are, because you're in the thick of it. I mean, we're a year apart,
right?
Basically the same age. We know some of the same people here in Shasta County.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to talk about the gaps and where you see some of the greatest need for people like yourself, especially in Shasta County, and how we can narrow some of those gaps. So with that, we'll take a 2-minute break and we'll be right back.
KCNR Shasta is also broadcasting at K243CT Redding.
I'm Tracy Edwards, CEO of the Redding Rancheria. Giving back to our local community is a tradition that is firmly rooted in our history. It is with great honor and pride that we have been able to support several amazing local businesses like these over the years.
Thanks to the Redding Rancheria for their support of the Kiwanis Shasta Dam Club Food for Kids program. We send 185 bags of food home every Friday. They're instrumental in helping us.
Redding Rancheria, proud to play our part.
Turtle Bay's 5th annual Redding Garden of Lights is back for another fun-filled holiday season. Open on select dates from November 22nd through January 5th. Featuring over 10 acres of outdoor illuminated gardens filled with 2 million lights. Don't miss this year's new additions, including new light displays and premium ticket packages. Plus, holiday-themed food, drinks, music, glowing swings, model trains, and much more. Redding Garden of Lights is presented by Mercy Medical Center Redding. Buy tickets now at turtlebay.org.
Make Mondays the best day of the week with Monday Night Football at Wind River Resort and Casino. Come on down to catch your favorite team on any of our 13 screens inside overtime. Join us for an epic watch party packed with excitement, good company, and amazing prizes. 49ers, home game tickets up for grabs all season long. Enjoy the delicious stadium snacks menu. Get your team gear on. Grab your friends and see why Mondays are the talk of the football season. For complete details, visit WindRiver.com and find your moment at Wind River Resort and Casino.
I'm Tracy Edwards, CEO of the Reading Rancheria. Giving back to our local community is a tradition that is firmly rooted in our history.
Thank you, Reading Rancheria, for supporting Tree of Life International Charter School. Gracias por todo su apoyo.
Thank you, Reading Rancheria!
The Shasta Lake Chamber of Commerce wants to thank the Reading Rancheria. They have sponsored our Friday night in the park for more than 18 years, and we really appreciate it.
Reading Rancheria, proud to play our part.
All right, we are back broadcasting live here in downtown Reading. This is Kevin Cry. This is my show. We're going to jump into the second half hour. But before we do, really quick, I want to remind everybody that I will be going live on Facebook tomorrow morning at 7 a.m. That is Vote Kevin Cry on Facebook at 7 a.m. I'll be talking a lot about this current election, the process of the election, what we're doing at the Board of Supervisors, and some of the upcoming things to finish out this year. In the studio with me live is Michael. We're talking about his background, and we're just now jumping into the second half about I want to talk now, Michael. So right before the break, you talked about you got a house. Mm-hmm. So talk to us really quick. How did you get that house? And then, and we're going to jump into the gaps of service and where Shasta County is lacking in helping individuals like yourself.
So the house, the program Visions had when I came in, they still have the same navigation program. You do you hit the ground running in Ms. Residential. You go into outpatient. After such a period of time that you begin looking for a home, they'll help you. This program is awesome program. I was there for a while. I wasn't sure exactly where I was going with housing. I just knew that at the time I was trusting people like Toby Crum. He is a major role in helping me along the way. And so I found this house in Anderson. It's 3-bedroom, 2-bath. And at a studio, it was more than what I needed, but the door was open and I took it. I thought, man, I'm going to be this much closer to my son. It's right next to Anderson Police Department. It's a safe place. And, so I'm there now and, everything's worked out.
So you have this house.
Yeah.
And you have a couple extra bedrooms.
Yeah.
Okay. And then so how, go ahead.
I'm a pretty selfish person, Kevin. I thought, this is going to be perfect for me and my son. We're just going to shot collar this place and have a good time and just run around, you know, and play games and stuff like that. He'll have his own room. I'll have my room. And I didn't, you know, I'm sitting there one day and God was like, I'm more than enough. And then I got a friend reached out to me saying that he needed a place to stay. And he's such a solid guy, such an amazing man. And he's got a lot of clean time. And he came in and then,
when you say he came in, you mean, did you rent a room to him?
I did. I rented him a room and he's got an amazing testimony himself. And I just like to surround my people with healthy guys like that. And, we both, you know, sat down and we talked and we were like, this is going to happen and this is not going to happen. And we want a safe place for one another so we can see one another get our families back. Right. He wants his daughter back. He reached out to her. He hasn't seen her in years. And, and then, so I have another friend, and I think you know him. He was needing a place to go, and he lives there. And, man, we just have the greatest time, you know. And I think God is using that opportunity that I had through Visions to help someone else. Like I said, I'm a selfish person. I wanted it all to myself. And but anyway.
So how many guys need houses? They come out of Visions, there's other programs.
You know, I think it depends on where you're at and mm-hmm. your walk. I mean, there's some guys that don't have a job or whatever or have a bigger family and have another need and they need a little extra help. Or you have someone that has a job and they maybe want a place on their own. The housing navigation program at Visions of the Cross, is amazing. They work with you. They help you with so many things. And so I've just seen different, there's different needs. There's a lot of men who need housing in this community.
So what do you think is the gap between somebody going through the Visions of the Cross program and then the, a relapse, even for yourself?
I'm going to say for me, it's always been between the 1 year and 9 months. You know, I work this program. I do all these things. The body heals, a liar returns, like the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says in the third edition. And I got all these things. Pride comes before the fall. And you get in a bad relationship, you start doing things on your own, you pull away from your sponsor, your home group, whatever it is that helps you and has helped you stay sober. For me, I've pulled away. I pulled away in those areas and I stopped.
And would you say that's common?
I think it has been in my life and I think it is in others. You know, there's something about, recovery that is, that's awesome, but there's also some really important things that you need people in your circle and you have to be open with them. Like I have a struggle picking the wrong women. And I know Numbers talks about that. Samson's parents told him to stay out. You know, God told his parents, keep your kid out of the vineyard. What'd he do? He went to the vineyard. What'd he do? He got some chick. Her name was Delilah and she ruined his life. And I think that's a struggle, and there's not a whole lot of, you can't really tell someone, hey, you shouldn't be doing this, but I'll tell you that I've messed up so many times, in this area, and, that's something that I need to take to the people in my circle, and if I have an interest in a young lady, I'll take it to them. And if they say, hey, this ain't good, then I'm gonna listen now. You know, so, because it divided my last marriage divided me and my son. It was horrible. It was horrible, and I don't ever want.
You've been married twice.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you were married the second time for 3 years.
Yeah.
And then, but now your son's 11 now.
He's 11.
He's 11, and you guys are together.
Yeah.
So one of the questions.
His name's Weston.
Weston.
I love you, buddy.
So one of the questions, you know, I have, and this is the thing. I mean, I know my brother relapsed, and again, we have mutual friends that, mm-hmm. that are currently going through Visions or that you're connected with. I mean, Shasta County is a pretty small place. The world's small when it comes mm-hmm. to addiction, and everybody's touched by it. And I know it's very proprietary to every single person of why they relapse. Mm-hmm. What is it? Do you think for you, does it, no matter how many people are in your circle, do you feel like it's really just the individual, like the individual is got to make that decision. And is that where you,
like for myself?
Yeah. For yourself.
I think it comes down to, I just remember my sponsor. I just remember the things that he's thrown my way. And it's real simple. He said, you just need, until you know that it's okay. He said, it's got to be healthy. And he said, just think on two things. Is it healthy or unhealthy? It's real simple. Is it healthy or unhealthy? And if I don't know the answer to that, I'm going to go to those people God put in my life. Ray Tony's been in my life for 11 years, and I meet with him and 40-some men at Little Country Church every Thursday morning at 6:30. So I don't go to meetings like Alcoholics Anonymous and things like that. I want more of God. I don't want more of the, you know, bunch of six people with the talking about their problems. I want to hear the solution. I want to go to the primary big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I want the meat. So I surround myself with all these men and I look at the knowledge and the wisdom they have, right? So you got 40 men in there and let's just say they've been saved for 30 years. That's 1200 years of wisdom and knowledge. And I mean, where are you going to get that at? You're not going to get that in the rooms.
Yeah.
You know, I do believe in that foundation. I believe that the cleaning the house is a part of the 12 steps. Number one thing for me, and I'm still working on it, is forgiveness. The 2 years.
Forgiving who? Other people or yourself?
I can't forgive myself. Just asking God to forgive me of these situations, my part in it, show me what I need to do, help me to make amends in areas that I can make amends that won't hurt others. You know, and I think the most important thing is to clear that wreckage, to clear that, you know, that part that I have a role in, and then focus. Here's what I think happens with men. I don't think that, these 18-month or 12-month programs are long enough. I think it needs to be 2 years. I think that a man needs to be in this program for 2 years. I mean, if I was only 6 months sober and you gave me a home on my own, I'm probably going to lose it. You know what I mean? I'm going to be tossed out there and be like, oh, floundering. Like, I need that community of people. I needed visions, and they were there. I don't know how many times in my life they've been a soft place for me to land. They never judged. They always loved me. They always hugged me. And I have never got that anywhere else, ever.
But, and you grew up in a pretty loving family.
I mean, yeah.
Even though, you know, there was obviously some issues, but
yeah.
I
hid a lot of the issues in my family. My parents finally came to a conclusion that they were sorry that they allowed me to drink at a young age, and they didn't know that it affected me so much. And my parents were very loving people, and I still have a lot of support. They're a long ways away. My mother is. My brother and my sister are all out of Missouri. And
so let me bring you back.
Yeah.
Okay. So you said in 6 months, if you were given a house in after a 6 month program, you'd probably lose it.
Probably.
And I know that, you know, when you talk about recidivism or you talk about people going back or relapsing, yeah. what is the part, like, you had a great job. You held.
I've had a lot of great jobs, and
but how are the work readiness programs, like, in the county? I know there's quite a few of them, but for people that are, you know, recovering, whether it's mm-hmm. alcohol or narcotics,
mm-hmm.
You know, what's the
look? Here's the thing. Here's the big picture. We live in a society where a low income person is having to come up with a middle class wage to live in a home. PG&E is outrageous. Prices of homes, it's just hard to live here. But when you put a lot of pressure on a guy that's got 6 months, 10 months, 12 months, that's had no responsibility, then he has to integrate into the world, work really hard, and then he starts pulling away from the things that work for him. There's going to come a day, and it talks about it in one of the books, that you'll be in your recovery, there'll be a day that you're at that least resistance to that first drink or drug. That's my story. I used to get the efforts, Kevin. Used to run and go back to the negative coping skill. That's what I did when I left my wife. I just went and got high, and I wound up in jail 3 days later.
Yeah.
You know, I was mad that somebody put fentanyl in my methamphetamines, and I'm like, why am I mad? Why did I even pick that up? It was a negative coping skill, and what I had done, I pulled away from all those people that loved me. I stopped listening to them. I had pastoral care. Stephen Webb at Harvest Church has been right there with me the whole time, and he's got a discipleship. He picks men up at Visions and women up at Visions, and they are doing an amazing thing at that church. I'm like, it's just amazing. He has a testimony too, you know? And so what I think is like, it's building that circle of trust, godly people that are going to lead you in the right direction, not some wishy-washy person that thinks they know everything. And I've leaned on those people, but now I take those small decisions before the people that care about me and love me and encourage me, because I don't want to mess up again. And all it takes is one little small permission. For me in the past, it's always been, okay, I'm going to smoke a joint. And 10 months later, I'm doing methamphetamines, or a year and a half later, I'm doing methamphetamines. Whatever it is, it's just those small permissions. And it's just my personal outlook on my relationship with God. And I start edging them out. The ego comes in, I get a job, I get a girlfriend, or whatever, life gets going, and I stop remembering how God has been good to me, and then I take my eyes off the cross, you know, and I've laid so many things at the cross and picked them back up, but we have such a loving God that.
Well, and here's one of the points, you know, well, I wouldn't say just one of the points, but, you know, and just having a conversation with you, and I had a gentleman named Henry, who I met, you know, and I probably I have, you know, family that has been impacted by drugs and alcohol and you know, some of these choices. And one thing I've really, really noticed in this 2.5 years, and I probably sat down and had a conversation like this with one person probably a couple hundred times, and I've only maybe brought on 3 or 4 on the radio, but there isn't two stories that line up at all. I mean, there's some similarities, there's some mm-hmm. crossovers, but every single one of them are so just really so, I don't want to say proprietary, but they are. I mean, your story, what motivates you? I mean, you've had a lot of people around you.
Mm-hmm.
When we talk about, because what I'm really curious of, as we've talked about these opioid dollar settlements at the Board of Supervisors, like I'm really sold on a preventative approach. And there is money for treatment.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of great people. Dr. Petit, Visions, Empire. I mean, you could go on and on. The Manor, many great organizations. And then the other part that I'm really interested in is just the work portion, helping mm-hmm. people get and sustain jobs.
Yeah.
Because what you just touched on there is, you know, the cost of living. And if you're coming out of addiction or you're coming out of, you know, some issues like that, like, you know, how do you make the money you need to support yourself and maybe even a child or a family? Are there resources that, I mean, I know they're out there, but have you worked with any of them, or are you just, I mean, you're pretty self-sufficient guy. You've worked hard your entire life.
I'm just going to say this. There's some very good companies in this town, and I have never seen one person go through Visions of the Cross that's ever had an issue getting a job. God blesses those men. I just see God working all the time. Good jobs. Jeff Shea, I worked at I-5 when I went through there a long time ago, and these companies, there's good companies in town. A man's just got to be willing to work, and I know that, I'm just going to say it, there's one thing missing out here, it's even in the church, is work ethic.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm thankful that my dad gave me that, but if you got a good work ethic and you have good routine, I guarantee you a job's going to meet you at the front door. It's always happened. This time around, I never sought a job. I had a guy come alongside me and say, you need to start your own business. I have my own business now. I'm licensed. I work for Tuscan and Son, doing maintenance on property, and I picked up clients along the way, and one of the reasons I have that is because I can take off now and be a part of my son's life and go do something with him. You know what I mean? That's the main thing. Everybody's different, but I see a lot of men come through there. If they're willing, they'll find a job. All they have to do is say they're at Visions. Visions has so much favor in this community. It's amazing because they've seen lives change. And the cool thing is, it just blows my mind, and I just want to share this, is how many children have been saved and born out of addiction in that place. The pregnant mothers that come there and get clean, and the children are no longer addicted. And how God restores the whole family, seeing men with their children. That's where it's at, Kevin. If you want a man to succeed, put his kids in his life. This court system here, they don't help a man get their kids back unless you're in CPS or all this. I've had to do it on my own. And it hurts. It's the hardest thing in the world, I think, for a man to be separated from his son and feel like I'm not worthy because I can't be a part of it. It's not about providing for that guy, that young man. It's about being a part of his life. All that'll come. But if you feel that missing gap, and you give a guy hope that someday, you know, we're gonna help you get your kid back or whatever, and that's what they did for me. Toby Crum has just been he's a brother of mine. I love him. Steve, they're all about the family. Hey, you're gonna get your son back, and dude, I see him every week. I go to movies with him. I'm gonna go buy him a pair of work boots today. We're gonna go to the boot barn. My son is gonna be in 4-H and the Bowman 4-H, and, you know, I have a really good friend that owns an engineering company here, and him and his wife, Jason Fine and Melissa, have just been so supportive, and I watch these guys be fathers to their kid, and, you know, with me and my dad, there wasn't a lot of time where we played and did things. If I wanted to be with my dad, I went to work.
Yeah.
I stayed in sale barns with him, bought and sold cattle, you know, and I just... So I want to be that dad. I'm not happy with how it's so easy for someone. It's been really hard for me to get my son back in my life. Have had no support in that through any of my recovery until I came to Visions of the Cross.
That's powerful.
Yeah, it is. And if any faith-based, and I hope you're listening, if any faith-based program out there is not restoring the father to the child, you're not doing it right.
Yeah.
And it's just disgusting to me that a lot of these people haven't brought that together. And that's why I just love Visions, because I just see miracle after miracle after miracle happening there. And the cool thing is these people know how to navigate and help each and every person, no matter what level they've been at, whether it's been at the top or at the bottom, with their life. But they know how to navigate a way to help that person through therapy, finding their therapist. The classes they have are so dynamic. They're well-rounded, that you can learn about your disease. They're state-licensed. I think they're the only program here that's state-licensed other than the Empire. Yeah. And you know, it's...
And that I don't know.
That means a lot. And
No. I know that means a lot.
No, I just don't know. I see the difference in education. It's easy to go to work and do all these things, but it's like, what did I miss as an addict that I need to know about myself so that I don't become that old person again? Yeah. And I've learned that. And here's the thing. Since I started studying Solomon, I remember that Steve taught a class, and he said, a man without a plan is a man without a vision, and a man without a vision will always return to his past. That rings in my mind every day, and I've written my vision out. And this is the biggest miracle. Before I drew my vision out, I had written it out. And God was already taking care of those things in my life, like immediately. My son was here. You know what I mean?
And
it just all came together. And I think that a man with a vision and a plan, he needs to work on that. Once he learns how to be clean and sober, he needs to have a vision, a purpose, you know, and he needs to have somebody going alongside of him, encouraging him, talking to him, help him go to the next level. Like, I'm going to do that.
Yeah.
You know? I'm going to go to college again. And
you know, one of the things that in one of my companies, we most of them work with kids, but one of them, you know, we're really, really strong about every child needs four adult positive role models in their life, four caring adults. And, you know, and I don't even think, and the more I'm in this space of talking to individuals like yourself, and going through this past meeting on Tuesday, you know, I believe more than ever, I think that number even just grows as we get older. There's not a less of a need for community. The difference is we oftentimes become one of those four in somebody else's life. And it sounds like one of the themes I'm hearing just from you is about community. And, of course, that foundational piece of having the Lord in your life.
Yeah.
And then having that strong community built around you, I guess one of the questions I have as we're kind of wrapping up our time, you know, what has your son said to you over the past, you know, 2-3 years as he's seen you, you know, growing and fighting for him?
You know, we sat down one night and we were going to eat dinner, and we were at Red Robin, and I said, Weston, would you like to pray? And he's really quiet. Would you pray? And I know that he's been groomed not to like me in some areas, and there's been some people that don't want me in his life. I'm not going to go there. But I asked him, I said, Weston, would you pray? First time I heard my son pray, and he goes, God, thank you that my dad's making good decisions.
Dead air isn't good, but you can't tear up and I can't tear up. Someone's got to say something. But that's where it's at, brother. I mean, that's where it is.
It's just making one good decision after the other. And if I don't know how to make it, I'm going to go to someone who's been there and who does. You know, I have a heart for men that have been raised in a drug and alcohol induced environment. Mine wasn't induced. It was just available, and I found a way. You know what I mean? My parents weren't okay with that life, but I know a lot of men have not been surrounded by godly men to help make good decisions. And I've watched these guys like Toby raise his son and Steve Jr. raise his kids, and I'm like, I want to be that dad.
Well, you are that dad.
Yeah, I am.
You are that dad, and you're gonna keep being that dad. And what I'll say, because we have about 30 seconds left, what gets me the most is the state of California and even federally, like faith-based programs are 86% more successful than non-faith-based, yet we keep funding things that don't nearly have the data or the success, and that drives me nuts. But we're going to keep pushing forward as a county. Michael, I really appreciate you coming in. I appreciate you sharing your story. That is it for the week. Shasta County, we love you. Michael, thank you again for coming in. Have a great day.
Thank you.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.